Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent, documentary, and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Roots So Deep is a four-part documentary series all about inventive farmers and maverick scientists building a path to solving climate change with hooves, heart, and soil. Can an underutilized way to graze cattle that mimics the way bison once roamed the land help get farmers out of debt, restore our depleted soils, rebuild wildlife habitat, and draw down huge amounts of atmospheric-destroying carbon? Those are just a few of the thought-provoking questions asked in this four-part documentary series, Roots So Deep, and we're joined today by the director, Peter Bick. Peter, welcome to Film School Radio.
It's nice to be here. Thank you, Mike.
Peter, before we dive into the reasons and how you came to be the director of this wonderful four-part documentary series, Roots So Deep, I want to spend a second here just to reflect on my experience watching this and how it reminds me of how removed we are from the food that we consume and how important the stewardship of the land is and how important it's been for thousands of years to the native people who were here before us, how they depended upon the buffalo and the stewardship of the land in order to provide everything they needed. So let's talk about how you became such an important part of this series and what motivated you to do this.
Well, just to talk about the impact of land, and you know, the bison are the best land managers North America has ever known. And beaver and prairie dogs are really important to that whole ecosystem. So the bison aren't alone in an ecosystem of making it work. And actually, the indigenous peoples that were here were very much in tune with the bison, using fire as a way to keep the grasslands from becoming forest, because grasslands that are grasslands are actually supposed to be grasslands. It's like, trees are great. I love trees. I'm a huge fan, been all my life. But there's some places that are naturally grasslands and we want them to be grasslands. But yeah, that whole ecosystem of grasses and animals co-evolving over hundreds of thousands of years, that's how those soils got so rich and deep. And so what we're seeing with farmers who are emulating that, replicating that, is they're able to build their soils back much faster than most of the textbooks from 10 years ago and back even thought possible. Like, there's a sort of a rule of thumb that it takes a thousand years to grow an inch of topsoil. And we're seeing these farmers growing an inch of topsoil or more in a decade. So that's a very hopeful message. And these folks are emulating the bison. They're using nature as something to work with as opposed to something to fight. And they're getting themselves out of debt. Their land is becoming a wildlife habitat refuge in their area. They're absorbing all the rain that falls on their land and it doesn't wash their soil away. It's just an amazing thing that the farmers have found. And now this group of scientists that I've been honored to help put together, we're going there and measuring. We think of the farmers as the scientists and that we're the measurement team.
An appreciation of native people is really looming over all of this. The fact that they were such wonderful stewards of their environment, of the land, and how much we are learning and have to learn in moving forward. I mean, just to take, and I think that's true all over the world. Native people have been living off the land for the most part, not everywhere, but certainly for the most part, and learning more about that, and now deploying the wherewithal, the technology, the resources that we can now bring to bear is exactly what this is about. This is what it feels like. If we marshal ourselves in a way, we can do so much good, not only for the farmers, but for the entire planet.
Yeah, well, the farmers are doing the work for all of us. And so how can we help the farmers is kind of my whole game right now. It's like, how can we help the farmers? How can we help the farmers? Because they're the land stewards. And if they're going into debt and using systems that are fighting nature versus getting out of debt and working with nature, it's a whole different ballgame for everybody else, everyone downstream, right? Like, a healthy farm absorbs a lot of water. So if all the farms are healthy outside of a big town, you don't get the flooding. you don't get that massive flooding like you get these days around every town, because every town's surrounded by a lot of concrete and then a lot of farmland that has a lot of degraded soil. Our soils are in really dangerous shape right now. Like, we're having dust storms like we did in the 30s. I've seen photographs. I know people who've seen them. They're just not getting reported, but we're having them. And that these farmers who are working with nature, they're fixing that. We give them the time and the ability and the knowledge, they could fix it fast. And that's the good news.
Yeah.
Nature wants to be healthy.
Yes.
That I'm sure of.
Something I like to say, left to its own device, nature will take care of itself.
And, oh, it will. Yeah.
And help. And we need to help. I think aquifers would also benefit from all of this as well. Our aquifers around, I don't know to the degree, but whatever degree that is, it'll be helpful. Well, let's go back to the origin story for all of this.
I'd been studying climate change and solutions to climate change with our film Carbon Nation that came out in 2011. And all the solutions we found, the soils just kept coming up and something was triggering inside of me that I want to focus on those. You know, if you treat the soils well, they absorb carbon, they draw it down. When you treat the soils poorly, they emit carbon, they become a source. And so when I started focusing in on that, and then I found these farmers that were cattle farmers, and they were seeming like to be building their soil so fast that I made a short film called Soil Carbon Cowboys. And that was we shot in 2013. It came out beginning of 2014. And that film just gave me such a huge lesson in what could be. You could just tell these farms were in amazing shape. And so, but what was missing was science. What was missing was data. You know, are these farmers getting themselves out of debt? Yes. You can ask them and they'll show you that. Is their land in better shape? Yep. But did we count the birds? Did we do the microbial studies? Is there more biodiversity in the bugs? Are the plants more biodiverse? Do the plants have more nutrient density? All that stuff just wasn't known. And are they drawing down greenhouse gases? Are they drawing down more CO2 than the natural emissions of methane from the cows and nitrous oxide from the soils that are both warming gases? Could they draw down more CO2 to cool things down than the warming of the methane and the nitrous oxide? So all those things, I didn't even know to ask those questions when I started in 2012, 2013. But I kept meeting scientists one after another who are a specialist in one of those bits, who are all interested in what this system was doing on these farms. And so we all got together in 2014 here at ASU and decided to be a team. We needed to then raise a lot of money. My first goal was to go to the fossil fuel industry. You guys have made so much money from carbon products that I use, that this computer uses, this microphone uses, all my cameras have used. Why don't you pay for the research to see if these farmers could actually draw down some of that carbon so that we can close the carbon cycle using the carbon cycle? And that concept actually came from my friend Russ Conser, who I met at Shell Oil in 2013. And he was an engineer. He'd been there for 32 years. And he was retiring. But when I showed up with these questions, it really triggered something for him. And we've been partners in this project. Russ Conser and I are the two that got together to get this thing going. And so we asked a lot of big companies to help us with this funding, because I think big companies should have soil health as part of their strategic planning, whether it's for the health of their employees, the health of their customers, the health of the planet that they're operating upon. And I can't tell you that everybody I met in all the big companies we asked agreed with me on that. One phrase that really bothered me was, I see why it's good for the planet. I don't see why it's good for us. That one just drove me crazy, because I kept thinking, I said, what planet are you on? If it's good for the planet, I think you should be looking at a self-serving way to make your planet better off. And so we got a lot of no's, we got a few yeses, and we raised basically $10 million to do a 10-year study. It took us 10 years to get it all in. And if anyone wants to read about every dollar and every dime that we pulled in, they can go to our website, which is rootssodeep.org. Hit the research button, and then there's an essay on every dollar that we raised. And we talk about it in the movie too. We don't hide from the funders that we had. But to me, we won't get to the scale of change unless we have everybody on board pushing, and companies, if they choose to, can work quickly. Many don't, but that's a choice. And so maybe we're now going to be able to push some of these folks who helped us to keep going.
And I'm so glad you brought it up, that you talk about it openly throughout a good chunk of the film, that, you know, you, where the money's come from. And it's a head scratcher at first, but then over the course of the four episodes, as you're watching it, the more important thing is that you're seeing progress. You're seeing the research, you're seeing the science, you're hearing scientists talk about, we keep going. If we make mistakes, we go back and we figure out why, what happened, why didn't the data check out, or why is it checking out? And all the things that you would want to know for this research. And let's identify what we call it throughout the film, the adaptive multi-paddock approach to raising cattle.
Yep.
And go ahead, let's jump into that, because it's fun to watch. The graphically, it's fun to, it's also fun to watch in action as well.
Yeah, it's great to see. The animals know when the farmer comes up to open up the gate to let them walk to the next paddock, they know they're going to get better food. So it's not hard to get the animals to move to the next paddock. So a paddock is a part of a pasture, right? And what these farmers are doing is they're basically emulating the way those bison moved across the Great Plains, the fact that they were all tied together in a herd. Now, obviously, the bison could be in a herd of 5 million, and these farmers are putting 100 cattle together in a small area for a short amount of time, where the animals eat half the forage, they have their manure and urine fertilized, their hooves stimulate seed growth, they stomp the other half of the forage to keep the soils cool, and they get moved on. And then that land gets to rest. And once that plant, half that plant's munched, it wants to grow back, and it wants to grow up to grow more leaves, and it wants to shoot down roots. And it's that combination of heavy hit and rest, which is the way the grasses and forbs and forages co-evolved with these types of animals grazing. I mean, it's an amazing thing. Like, the saliva from the animal's mouth is part of the process. Okay. The tugging on the plant, the way it shakes up the roots, is part of the process. And we don't really know what exactly is happening with that, but it's doing something good. And so we came in to say, okay, let's measure the microbes on both sides of the fences, the conventional way of grazing, the adaptive way of grazing. Let's measure the bugs on both sides of the fence and see if there's more diversity. Let's measure the birds as a wildlife indicator species. Let's measure how much water is coming into the soil. Let's measure if the animals are healthier. Let's measure if the farmers are happier. And we just, all these things, we came together to measure all those metrics to see if the adaptive side was more productive or less productive than the conventional side, to see if the land was in better shape, to see if the farmers were getting themselves out of debt or not. And for me, to see if there could be a type of grazing that was a climate change solution, or was it just less bad? And those were the questions we had when we started this thing, and we didn't know what we were going to get. But we show the good, the bad, and the ugly with doing research out in the real world. It's messy.
Yeah,
it's really messy. It's not easy sometimes.
And the other thing is, this is a long haul. This isn't a year or two commitment. Yeah. This is over a 10-year period, I believe.
Yep.
And that's pretty amazing. And by the way, I do want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Peter Bick. He is the man behind this remarkable, really, truly, check this out, find it, Roots So Deep. And Peter Bick is who we're talking to about this. And to see in I wouldn't call it real time, but to see it actually measurably see, you could see it with your own eyes. That, and I was particularly taken with the idea of seeing the birds involved, that part of the story, as an indicator of health.
Yeah,
we're losing birds on a massive scale, scale right now.
Yep,
and this has got to help somewhat. It's such an important thing, and so to see that, also another hugely important part of this documentary series is getting to meet the people on the farms, the farmers, the people who are working the land.
Absolutely.
And watching some more than others, some quicker than others, sort of as they begin to understand what you're doing over a long period, plus the scientists that you
don't
work
give away
with.
The ending. Don't give
no,
away.
No,
the
no,
ending.
No, no, no,
yep,
no, no.
Yep, yep.
But also the scientists who are part of this, and we get to know some of them as well along the way, mm-hmm. especially the bird guy. I forgot his name.
His name's Mike McGraw.
Mike McGraw, thank you. Yeah. Mike McGraw.
Yeah.
Mike McGraw, who's terrific, who is an amazing ambassador. So that's all of those things are part of this. And again, getting to know these farmers, describe the methodology, what you did with the different side-by-side farms and et cetera. That's, I think, a very important part of this.
Well, measuring all the different metrics side-by-side was part of it, but getting to know the farmers, I didn't know we were going to get to, I, you know, you just get into a big project and I spent years on it. I just didn't know how well we would get to know the farmers, if they would want me to film them at all, whether they would say yes to us doing all of our research on their land, whether they would not kick us off after we've been there for a couple of years. You know, we got really lucky, and the farmers themselves are all really good on camera. I mean, they're all very engaging characters.
Yeah.
And that's just pure luck. I mean, because we found these farms and these farmers in such a random way that science requires. And just to get lucky to get farmers on both sides of the fence who are cool people, they're good at what they do. They made the time for us to film them and get to know them. They're friends of mine. I care about these people.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky to know them. Very lucky to know them. They've watched my boys grow up. I mean, over these many years, they've seen my boys go from just little guys to now they're taller than me. The first one is anyway, and the second one will be. That's the thing I've learned about the farm world is family really is real. Like the idea of loving family, I'm not saying everyone gets along with everyone in their family. Obviously, that's not the case. But the idea that family's part of the show. Like every time I go to a grazing conference or a farmer conference, there's families there. It's not just people. When I go to business conferences, it's just the folks who are in from the companies that are there. But at the farm conferences, you see babies, you see families. And so I would bring my boys. I didn't even ask permission. I just did. And everyone was very engaged and very welcoming. So I love that piece of it. And the idea that we were pitting neighbors against each other, that was just not the case.
Yeah.
And that was a very delicate start because a lot of the conventional farmers just assumed we were there to say they'd done something wrong. And that wasn't the case. And we made it really clear it wasn't the case. We would just say to them, you're doing nothing wrong. And we think we might be able to find a way for you to do less work or better work, your time be more enjoyable, and that you'll make more money and spend less money. Would you help us? Would you help us do the research so we could find out if that's the case? That's our hypothesis. And they all said yes, all of them. And so there we got lucky. You can't hit a baseball if you don't swing the bat. So we were out in the world asking to do this, but we did get lucky. No question about it.
Well, and also speaking of generational, one of the farmers that you speak with, 1858 or something like that?
Yep. The baby, Tyler Garrett's son, is the eighth generation on that farm. Yep.
I mean, come on. And intergenerational perspectives, right? The dad, very often the dad, well, we've been doing it this way for seven generations or whatever.
Yep. Or the grandmom. You know, we had both.
Some of these farmers, many of them had never been on the grounds or of the farm next door. That's amazing.
And they were friends.
Like
the story in Woodville, Mississippi, they're friends, but they had never talked about raising cattle before. What I felt was going on there was the adaptive farmer was first generation. So the last thing he's going to do in his community is tell anyone what to do. He's not from there, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't born there. He wasn't raised there. And he and his wife are not going to tell people what to do. That's the last thing they're going to do. Where the conventional farmers who've been there for generations, they're curious, but they don't want to get in their neighbor's business.
I know.
And so it's a politeness, actually, that was preventing communication. And since I'm a filmmaker, and I mean, I try to be polite when I'm filmmaking, but sometimes we poke our noses into places that, you know, that's our job. And so when I found out that they had never talked about it, I was like, we got to get that. And I asked them, hey, when I come back, can we sit on Cooper's porch and you guys talk about it? And they both said yes. So it wasn't like I had to twist their arms, but they just hadn't thought about it. And we filmed for 3 hours. And, you know, the scene in the movie is probably, you know, it's in two parts. I bet you total, it's probably 7 minutes of episode one. And it's a 3 hour conversation. So one of the beautiful things about shooting all the footage we shot is once the series is up, May 28th, it opens in the US and Canada on our website, rootsodeep.org. You can come stream it there. And once it's up, then we can start sharing some of the outtakes, some of the dailies, yeah. You know, because they're really interesting. It's just, if you shoot 500 hours of people talking and you've got a 4 hour series, you're not going to have, you know, obviously got a lot left.
You know, there's so much here. There's so much here. We sort of run out of time, but addressing the issue of suicide in the farming community, this is another sort of subtext to this. The failures, the, you know, the disappointments, a generational affecting kind of disappointment. So much here. The film, again, is called Roots So Deep. As you mentioned, it's coming out on the website on, you said, May 28th.
RootsSoDeep.org. Yep. You just go there. You'll stream it like you would any place else. And but we're doing it indie style. We're doing it grassroots.
I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy that you're getting this. I mean, you're getting the release of this four parts. It's a deep dive, and it's also so humanizing. There's so much about this film that will give you hope and reason to believe that we as human beings moving forward can learn, will learn, and will do better. And Peter Bick, thank you so very much for this film, Roots So Deep, this series. And thank you for your time today here on Film School Radio.
Thank you, Mike Casper. Appreciate it, buddy.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Caspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.